is 9-1, isn't it?
It is.
It's the BER ending months.
Yes.
Okay, good morning. Today is September 1st, 10 o'clock in the morning. We're here in the city of Petersburg with the registrar, Miss Dawn Williams. Richard Shoemaker is an observer, and Tammy Shoemaker is an observer. Okay. And thank you very much for meeting with us, Dawn. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
So first we have a few general questions. And question number one, what is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
Voter confidence or insecurities with the absentee voting process.
Okay. Are there any other major concerns?
No, we're in pretty good shape otherwise.
Okay. Question number three. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel, and training needed to run an effective election in November?
Yes.
Okay. So question number four does not apply. Question number five. The county election board is supposed to consist of two Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor. But in some areas, boards have trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead, or another Democrat. What is the situation in Petersburg?
We have two Dems, one Republican.
Okay. Question number six. What about the precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
The honest answer would be no. We are predominantly a Democratic area, so we have an overwhelming or tilted on the scale. Mm-hmm. We do have some Republicans that are willing to serve, but I would not say it was equal. So what we do to try and offset this is we ask those, say if we have a Republican primary, and so of course we don't have enough to fully staff that whole primary. So we would ask officers, first of all, we'd reach out to the party, do you have anyone you can send us, because that is part of their responsibilities. Second, we would ask our officers, would you agree to serve either or, you know, when it comes to that. But an honest answer would be no, we're not equal.
Do you have active Republican and Democrat Party engagement in your processes?
I do from the aspect of observers. The parties pretty much try to hold on to their maintenance list to be the ones that work the 40-foot or come in and observe. So they will stay in touch with us from that angle or along the lines. I'm very careful to make sure they're notified of every one of our processes so they can be here and observe if they wish. Include them in all of my mailings, my notices, my deadlines, my dates, just because transparency is the key for us.
Mm-hmm.
So you do stay and keep a well-oiled machine as long as you're inviting everyone, whether or not they show, but both parties are very active here.
Oh, that's good news. Question number seven, is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
All year. I have very good team players.
Okay, thank you very much. Now a few questions on the voter roll. When was the last time the voter file in your county was scrubbed or cleaned?
That's cute, I like the words. Actually, January 1 in the off season, as we have time, we go through and we compare our files to a data list or alphabetic list for our locality, just to make sure that we haven't missed anything or there were not duplicates in the file, because one of the biggest registrar complaints are all the duplicates. So to make sure nothing was misfiled and you didn't find XYZ. So yeah, we go through the end of each year during those off season. Sometimes we have time in June, July, but if we have a June primary, which we did, we don't.
Okay.
So it's totally scrubbed the beginning of every year.
Okay. Question number nine. Does the health department or coroner or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month so they can be removed from the voter roll?
The truthful answer is no, not directly to us, but they do, and I don't know about the health department or the coroner. Bureau of Vital Statistics sends that list to the State Board of Elections, and it trickles down into our hoppers.
So the follow-on question there, 9B, if no, how often do they send a list?
Again, Vital Statistics monthly, the others I've never received a list from. We also pull from the obituaries for anything locally.
Okay. Question number 10, When was the last time the clerk of court submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on a jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
I do know that I've received a few. There's not a specific time, and I have a new clerk. I've received that once from her, but prior years it was more often.
Okay.
So it's not, I couldn't say annually, that would be a fib.
So it's like a case-by-case basis from your current clerk?
Correct.
Okay. Question number 11. When was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List or any other change of address list?
We just worked up the NCOAs July. I'm not the exact date, but I know it was in July. And then other lists come about as list maintenance. We might have a multi-state cross-reference after federal elections. So there are other lists, but the NCOA just occurred.
Okay. Question number 12. Are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
I am. I will say to you, up to date, there will be inactives in almost all localities because voters change their address and don't make us aware. So the NCOA helps us work that up. And then those that we know of, any return correspondence gets worked up here. So you'll go in and say there was return correspondence on a voter record, and then you'll put that into a status of inactives. And then they go on confirmation mailings, which get mailed out from the state based on us having responded to that data. So I'm very confident. I just want you to know it's never 100% because some people are inactive.
Yeah, I guess the inactive is your main concerns about.
Yes, we're always looking for inactives. And here we have access to DMV, so we can cross-reference and try to pull data and compare to do better updates.
Okay. Question number 13. How many households in your locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address?
I do not know. That's unknown. I don't even know that I have access to that. We would have to take each individual address and put it into the system and see how many would pull at that address.
That would be a job.
Yeah, as far, in other words, if I knew of 7 persons residing in a house all of age, here's a good example, Petersburg Home for Ladies, but it is basically, an infirmed type of situation. So I know they have more than 7, but unless it's a situation like that, I wouldn't know about households. So I would know about elderly high rises,
right,
handicap facilities, aging situations. That would be it. And so, that's only mental, because I do know.
Okay. All right. I understand that. Question number 14. During registration, how do you verify that voters are citizens?
That's face value. They answer the question. And then when we go to input the data, if something were to pop back on us, then we would have to dig deeper. But otherwise, that's the honest, they're certifying that they are.
Okay. Okay, moving on. Concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines in the 2020 elections. There are 3 types of voting machines used. Question number 15. There are 3 types of voting machines used in Virginia. Can you tell me which machines you use?
Yes, we use the DS200s and the Express Votes, and they're through Election System and Services, or ES&S as we call it.
Express Votes. Okay, thank you. Question number 16. Who calibrates the voting machines, and can you give us a brief explanation of the process?
Printelect and ES&S maintain our equipment, and they also do the logic and analytical testing, which is occurring, like I said, Friday. That's basically what we call that calibration, happens in logic and analytical testing. So I would say to you, there's nothing that we have or that we work with that is attached to the internet. So they will bring in the thumb drives of a test election, because we call it a test deck, and we have a test deck of ballots. So the ballots are marked accordingly to try to create an issue and then to be perfect. And then that's how the calibration is done. After he inserts the test deck data, the thumb drive data, then they begin to insert the test deck of ballots. Mm-hmm. To make sure that they're accepted or rejected. And that's our calibration process.
So what is on the thumb drive?
The thumb drive is actually the machine itself. You're putting in the date, the time that you open, because you can't open those machines without doing an override once you've entered the thumb drive. The thumb drive has the name of the machine, its model number, its make, all of that, number one, and then it goes to the election, type of election, general or special or primary, the date, the time. So again, when we go to pull the machine up or open it, if the data doesn't match or if we try to go in before 5 o'clock, it's gonna send an alert to us on the screen. It's not election time yet. So same thing for when you close at 7 o'clock. If you have voters that come in afterwards, you have to approve that machine to accept a ballot beyond that time. And all of that is logged on that tape at the end of the evening.
So all that is actually like on the your programming from that thumb drive.
Yes.
That you can't open up before 5, you can't accept anything after 7. So that thumb drive is telling that thing what to do.
Yes.
Okay.
So the thumb drive is made, I would guess you would say third party, you know, at the vendor facility, but that is what makes that election work within that machine. For instance, it's not happened here, but it could happen somewhere if they use multiple ballots and if they have multiple districts. So that machine will not accept a ballot coded that does not match that coding.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make better sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the whole process. So the calibration and then the test deck and then the responses to it will let them know if everything works. And then we code the machine for each ward. In case, say, each ward may have a separate ballot. When we have city council and school board, we do even wards or odd wards or staggered. So our ballots are set for just that. So you wouldn't want the wrong machine with coding to end up at the wrong precinct. So that's why the specifics happen behind the LNA. Each machine is marked then for which ward it goes to, if it's a ward-based machine.
And that's really just for local elections where you're talking
when
about school
change.
Board, stuff
yes.
like that. Thank you very much for that detail. Question number 17, do you invite party representatives to witness the calibration?
Yes, I sent that out a week ago to give them notice of the date, time, place, and they're welcome to attend.
Do they attend them?
Sometimes, it's rare, maybe twice, you know, in the last few years, otherwise no.
So only
and I actually send it out to all the candidates as well as the parties.
How about the candidates? Do they usually attend?
They've been the couple that have.
So usually the candidates and rare that the...
They will for national elections. The parties are more involved in national state level.
Okay. Question number 18, are voting machines ever connected to the internet?
No.
Okay.
Not even our electronic poll books. They're not internet access either.
So the follow-on question that is, if they're not connected to the internet, how and when are they updated?
Internally in the logic and analytical. So the logic and analytical testing is Friday for the voting machines. The poll books are going to be updated. Well, when they're going to come to us, they're going to be a brand new system. Our system was outdated and did not seek recertification. So I'm sad on that one. I loved it. So we're going with Advocate, which is a state-based system that a lot of other GRs have been using for years. And when they come in, they will be tested and set up that day, and then we'll do training, and then we'll follow up and dump our alpha list into that later on. But everything is done in-house.
Okay. See, next section, many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued that these changes have weakened the integrity of the election process. Question 19, as an election professional, do you think the changes made in the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened the election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made no change in election integrity?
I would say slightly weakened integrity would be my honest opinion. And if you want me to explain why, to me it would be the removal of the witness signature, because that was always kind of like a secondary layer.
Okay. We'll talk more about that in a second, I believe. Question number 20. Did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training or staff or voter education or equipment or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
We did. I sought the CTCL grant, and I believe they're not in Virginia.
You're correct.
So that answer would be yes. And then we also received funding from Virginia, from the State Board of Elections, for the CARES Act.
So if yes, what was the funding or the contribution used for?
We were very blessed. That's what I've been able to purchase the new electronic poll book system with. I was able to purchase new voting equipment. When I say that, the DS-200, I didn't need additional express votes. We also did additional training. We purchased a tremendous amount of COVID gear outside of what the state provided. If I'm talking too fast, I'm sorry.
You're doing fine, Dawn.
We did voter education with pamphlets, sample ballots, postage. Really and truly, it enabled us to do a huge amount of all doing education, you know, and just pushing it out, pushing the information out. Our instructions changed 3 times with everything that happened behind COVID. So again, instead of the burden being picked up by the city for all of those costs, we had that additional money there as long as we allocated each line of that it was used or that COVID paid for it. So, that's what I labeled it instead of CTO. It was everything staff, voter education. Here, the 45 days of early voting came into play during that same time frame. So it enabled us to get more staffing because we actually began to be a precinct in the front office.
Mm-hmm. How much was the CTCL?
The CTCL, I was amazed. I was coming back from vacation and I was like, oh no, it opened up. So I immediately tapped in that guaranteed you $5,000. We got $89,000.
Oh wow.
That's what I said. I mean, I had chills and tears.
How much was the CARES Act?
66. So again, when I say that, you know, that's what enabled us to step out and purchase the electronic poll book program because I had to have everything, including brand new laptops.
That was a terrific aid to you.
It was.
Question number 21. Effective July 1st, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election during a declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training your staff to ensure that there is a signature match for the upcoming elections?
We went over this yesterday in training too, because it's not just every emergency. It only has to be something along the lines of a health-related emergency and pandemic, which I would have worded it your way too before. What we're doing is when the ballots come back to us, we clip the top off and then we check for the inside. Same thing as curing process. Mm-hmm. We start from the onset of the first set of ballots coming back because believe it or not, the mail is sometimes taking 2.5 to 3 weeks mm-hmm. to come back, at least if you can believe in the postmarked on the front of the ballot. So with that being said, we immediately start the curing process to make sure that signature's there, witness, that it's complete.
So do you have like signatures somewhere that you compare?
We can't do verification. We do not have investigative powers and we do not have signature verification.
So you just look to see if it's signed.
Exactly. And to be honest, I don't know about you. Mine's changed, of course, getting married.
Yeah.
But we just have nothing to compare to. And it's changed before getting married of what I looked like 20 years ago. It was much neater back then.
Question number 22. There is a lot of concern in Virginia and across the country about the security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes. What are the chain of custody procedures for ballot drop boxes here in Petersburg?
Here in Petersburg, we now have two. We have one to the right of the door that tends to get used. It's an overall drop box for everything. People will drop their voter registrations in it, etc. And we had that long before drop boxes for elections became the new thing. The other one that is actually a ballot drop box is on the street side as you go out. It's very nice and fashionable. Oh, we bought that with CARES Act money or CTCO. which enabled it because the prices jumped to around $3,000 for those at that point in time. But we have external cameras that stay placed on both of those boxes in our entranceways at all times.
Okay. So when you go...
Oh, the chain of custody. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Always two members. And if there are not two of us present here, then we just don't check it that day. We'll check it the next morning when someone else comes in. So the same thing occurs to each box, and then there's a memo sheet that updates that. In fact, she asked me this morning, do you want me to take this lid off? The one on the street, we put a slit in so that it's not getting trashed the rest of the year, because that's very designated for ballots. The other one is anything. But again, so it's open all year for registration apps, etc. So two persons check off, come back in, the numbers match, and then we log that. On election day, same thing. You know, we take a ballot box out to every precinct. We attach like a bicycle lock to a table up in the leg joint so that no one can walk away with, you know, rolling a ballot box out. And then at the end of the night, it takes two people to verify and bring that box back to us.
Who might those two people be?
Officers of election.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when, so they bring it back to you, how they turn it over here to registrar office?
Same thing, chain of custody, two members of the electoral board, and my staff is here to accept those.
Okay.
So what happens to them after that process? So then they go to whom?
What
to open?
The box or the ballots?
The ballots, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Once we open it with witnesses, and then that number, and it's certified how many came out of each box. Based on the precinct is how we do our cap here. So all of those ballots will just kind of be trunked in a box by precinct, and we will begin to do the process for the cap. And we will knock them off, go in and put them on Veris that they were returned, you know, marked, because it's presumably marked at that time. And then the cap will immediately accept them. We give the cap a list that says how many for each precinct we're giving them so they can add those to their numbers.
So then the ballots are physically moved to another location for
the
cap?
In our back room for the cap.
Okay, so your cap is here.
Mm-hmm.
So then once they get to cap, what is the process after that? Are they sitting there waiting for a specific day to be opened, or are they opened up each day they receive them?
They came back during the election. If we're getting them after the election, say that they're not returned until after 7 o'clock, they're not opened until the next day, okay, because they were received but after 7.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here, and they're here till about 11 that night. But again, to maintain control of the process, we do all the logging for Tuesday evening, take them back, and they're there until they come in the next morning to add to that count.
Okay, so that's election day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what about prior to election day, the ballots that you're getting
outside?
The 45 days, yeah.
Just here, because our only ballot boxes are here until election day. Every day, those are just worked in. We do keep the number count, just to add.
Number count as far as ballots coming in for that particular day.
Right, for that day.
So
as soon as they come in, the same thing, we begin to do the curing process. Anything that comes in prior to election day that we can attempt to save for the voter, if they made a mistake,
right,
then we immediately begin that process. So if we check it at noon and they're 10, then we immediately start the curer will begin to call, email, send letters to get that person in here so that say it's missing a signature and we have to reissue and they take care of it. But every day is immediately worked up.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that detail. Question number 23, was there any time during the last election cycle when your drop boxes did not have video monitoring?
No.
Question number 24, who is responsible for reviewing the video, and were party observers present during the review?
Only myself or the electoral board, and that's only based on if there's been an issue or a question brought to us. Otherwise, we're not invested in that without an issue.
Do you invite the party observers, or do they ever come look at the review?
No, and we haven't invited them.
Okay.
We haven't had one. We're not aware of an issue, I guess, would be the best answer.
Okay, moving on to the next section. To strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we hope to expand our observation efforts and have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers. Question number 25. Would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an Election Day page program as described in State Statute 24.2, Tax 604.3?
We attempted to use a page program many years ago. The parents were the problems, not the children. Parents didn't bring them to the meeting. We had a secondary meeting. Parents actually made statements like, who do you think is going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and take them? So I didn't have a problem with the children. I had a problem with the parents, and it was so overwhelming, we've never done it again.
That's crazy. And the kids want to be a part of it, and the parents don't
want to support it. So if they welcome it, we do have one young man. He reached out about 2.5 years ago. He's still with us. He had a conflict last year with his school schedule, came at the last minute under COVID changes, and he was sorry he couldn't work. But he was 17 at the time, and Ben is now going to be 18 and a full-fledged officer. So I'm not totally against it, but it does take a regimented process for parents, especially for children that don't have transportation.
Right. But you get somebody who's schooled in the election process that can really benefit your office.
Yeah, most definitely. And definitely great greeters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we used a couple of persons for recently. So I'm not going to say I haven't done the process. I prefer not necessarily to go in that direction unless we have able, willing parents. So what I learned to do was a permission slip. I did try that the first time too, though. But it's worked for the last couple. But they contacted us. It's not like we reached out and sought individuals. So they were already vested or interested in the process.
Okay. Question number 26. Would you authorize nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives as described in Section 24.2, Tax 604.5A?
I would say to you, I do believe the board would. You know, that's where the separation here in Petersburg comes in. Electoral boards are totally responsible for the election itself, even though registrars are very active. But, you know, that would fall under them. But there would be no reason for us not to allow nonpartisan to assist or observe, as you call it.
So I'm going to say yes per election board.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number 27. Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
We actually have already done that. We had a 13 team of African governors come and visit. It was a remarkable experience for all of us. And of course, in their nation, it's observing to bring a gift. So we had a gift just because we had done some background and research. But it truly was a great experience. They had never seen anything as open and transparent and visible. So they were sitting back there, and, you know, the only thing we had to say is we have to keep it down. But, you know, they were just so excited for what they were witnessing. So we learned a lot as well. But, yeah, we're very open to that. And I know other areas in Virginia allowed access as well.
That's awesome. Question number 28. Have your local party chairs been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it's open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
Yes, they are aware.
Do you get attendance from them?
Yeah, we did one day last year, but they also had lots of people at the 40-foot line. So I think they were basically garnering the numbers of who was using the process.
More like a poll worker.
Right. Poll watcher.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
That's okay.
Thank you. Question to see here. 29. Do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibilities of observers?
Yes, we do. The Do's and Don'ts, Virginia's.
Do's and Don'ts, okay. So there is not a question for number 29B. And I think you see here, thank you, the survey is complete now. We deeply appreciate your time today and look forward to keeping in touch as we go through the 2021 state elections. And this will end this recording.
Anything beyond that?